Streaming bandwidth provided by worshipchannels.com. Live streaming made simple. On today's Tech Help for Churches, digital street preaching. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Tech Help for Churches. My name is Paul Allen Clifford, and I'll be your host. One thing that most of you may not know about me is I do freelance work when I'm not streaming and when I'm not podcasting or writing and such, since those aren't quite paying the bills, at least not yet. So, this past weekend, I got to do a little freelancing for a local event. Well, it's not super local to me, but I'm in Kentucky, and you might know that the Kentucky Derby was this weekend. And as a tech person, there are tech jobs. Gambling and drinking and such aren't one of the vices that really bother me at all. I mean, I see the devastation they can do, but they're not things that are my personal issue. I've got other things that I flee from. So I was offered this job, and quite frankly, things are a little tight here in the Clifford household. So I went ahead and I took the job, drove into Louisville, Kentucky from Lexington, which is about where I am, and I parked at the stadium they have there and walked to Churchill Downs because there's basically no parking at Churchill Downs. Well, there's some, just not enough for the amount of people they have on Oaks Day and Derby Day. As I was walking, something really broke my heart. I saw three or four groups of people doing street preaching. Now, that in and of itself didn't break my heart. What broke my heart was that they were not advancing the gospel. In fact, it really felt like they were doing the opposite. That really hurt me to see. In fact, on my way back from the track the first day, there was a lady that kind of was briefly by me, and she said, "Are they saying I'm a sinner just because I went to the track?" And of course, as a Christian, as someone that goes to church, you know that that's not what the Bible teaches at all. The Bible teaches that we're all sinners for all the things that we regret, all the mistakes that we've made, some that we may not even agree are sins, still are, but it's not just everyone who was at the track is a sinner and everyone who wasn't, but that seemed to be the impression she got from this street preaching. So what does that have to do with technology and the internet and church? Well, let me propose to you that there are a couple of good ways to do evangelism online and a couple of horrible ones. And let's talk about effective evangelism online. I actually have a friend, Tony Whitaker, who's over at InternetEvangelismDay.com. And so he's got all sorts of resources on doing evangelism online. On more than one occasion, I've had him give away my book, Tweeting Church, for just that reason. So here's one thing that I've noticed. I used to beat myself up for not doing random kind of assault-style evangelism. And then I realized that wasn't what God was calling me to at all, when I realized all the evangelism I had been doing. You see, I was in college, it's about 20 years ago, and I had a friend who was an agnostic, and I witnessed to him all the time. Now, I didn't think of it as witnessing because it wasn't hard. It wasn't painful. It was just, we're talking about God, right? But in fact, in retrospect, that's exactly what I was doing, is I was talking to him about the love of Jesus, and I thought it didn't count because it wasn't hard. I get the gift that I go to a church that is really, really, really involved in evangelism. I mean, a lot. And through the ministries of our church, we've seen over 25,000 people come to know Jesus in 14 years. So you do the math, that's a lot. And I've also seen the church just declining in general, at least in North America. Maybe not in every other place, but just in general. And a lot of that is failure to embrace effective methods. So the camp meeting worked great in the 1800s when there was no television, there was very little entertainment. Brass bands worked great in the 1800s and 1900s when there was very little entertainment that you could go to. Now, we're inundated with entertainment. If you can't find something to do with an hour of your time, either you're off in the middle of nowhere or you are just not paying attention or not trying. People have a lot of options. But I want to suggest to you that there are Christians that are making headway doing things that aren't necessarily as overt as standing on a street corner, yelling and screaming, and talking about how much God has to hate. Yeah, someone actually said that. I'm thinking of people like Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey is clearly a Christian, and yet he is in a lot of places. A lot of secular places, because his ministry is helping people with financial trouble. So people who are secular that have financial trouble see him as an expert, and he can talk to them about the gospel. And the reason that he can is because he has earned the right to be heard. So that's the first thing I want to talk to you about today, is earning the right to be heard. When you're online, and that's exactly what I'm suggesting here, is that we could do the 21st century version of street preaching online by making friends and developing relationships. Granted, Jesus did do a lot of preaching to crowds and everything, but keep in mind that people didn't have a lot of other things to do. I mean, you had to work, you had to eat, and when you weren't working, eating, or sleeping, any time you had them, you couldn't go to the movie, you couldn't surf the net, you couldn't turn on the television. There were plays, but there weren't a lot of them, and they were very expensive. There were public spectacles in Rome, but not everyone lived in Rome. And there were public spectacles other places, but not every day, and not ones that everyone could approach. So Jesus could engage people. So by providing something for them to think about, talk about, engage with, he was earning the right to be heard in that culture. Standing on a street corner yelling, you haven't earned the right to be heard. It would be like an atheist walking up to you and saying, God doesn't exist, and then walking away. If that registered with you at all, and it probably would, but if it did, it probably wouldn't convince you whatsoever. There's no part of you that would go, huh, never thought of that. Now, But if you have a friend, and that friend is someone you love very much, and you talk back and forth about these issues, you'll influence each other. So, step one, earn the right to be heard. On Twitter, I provide a whole lot of free links, things that I find online that I think are useful. And not all of them are Christian, although a good chunk are. So I think that I'm getting the right to be heard by being helpful to people. I think a lot of this is what the Salvation Army has always been good at, is earning the right to be heard by helping poor people. It's really a lot harder to dismiss an organization that spends all their time and effort helping the poor than it is to dismiss one that you view as just being about themselves, whether that's true or not. The next thing I want you to do after you've earned the right to be heard is I want you to listen. When people are having problems, they'll talk about them. I had a Twitter follower in the last week and a half, about 14, 15-year-old girl, who tweeted me, "Hey, subscribe to my YouTube channel." So, you know, anytime someone interacts with me, I try and follow up. So I went to her YouTube channel, and I saw one that said, a video that said, "Why I Want to Be Baptized." And so I watched it. I didn't understand it at all. It had something to do with Minecraft, which, if you're not familiar, it's a video game. So I asked her about it, and she was hesitant to respond, but told me to take a look at her Tumblr blog, however you say that. I looked, and it's a little confusing. It's kind of like she thinks that the world is like a video game, and that's why there are things that don't make as much sense, because God is a giant programmer. And I get that, but she didn't say that she had faith in Jesus. So I've been engaging with her a little bit back and forth and just asking questions and listening and letting her know that she matters as a person. So that's something else you can do. Number three, don't be afraid of sharing your faith. Jesus said that the harvest is ready, but the workers are few. What if that's true? What if it's actually the case that there are more people that are ready to believe in Jesus than you dare hope to believe, but they need a friend to talk to them? We've seen that at our own church a lot. There are some people that think they believe it, that they're Christians. They think that they know him because they've always gone to church. That's it. That's their only reason. No moment of decision. No, "Hey, God encountered me on this one time." Nothing other than, "I go to church every Sunday." And those people, you can't just say, "Hey, you don't know Jesus." You have to gently become their friend and care about them. By the way, caring about people helps this be possible. The more you care about people, the more you're likely to engage evangelistically with them when they need it. Now, here's the thing. I'm not a great evangelist. I'm not. One-on-one, I have some social issues. I'm a little introverted. My wife, on the other hand, is phenomenal. She'll meet a total stranger and make sure she listens first, make sure that she's friendly first, but praise for an opportunity. Look for opportunities. Make the most of every opportunity, the Bible tells us. And when she sees it, she jumps in. She's incredible in that way. I sometimes jump in, and I'm not as great as I am, but I don't want you to have any regrets. You see, I've had that moment. I've had a moment where I knew Jesus was asking me to talk to someone. I was at church. There was someone crying after service. And I was apparently the only one who saw. Because normally my church is great at this. And I knew I was supposed to talk to him. But I didn't. I was frozen by fear. I knew what God wanted me to do, but fear wouldn't let me. Now, as it turns out, everything worked out well. His name's Jordan, and he now knows Jesus. Someone else talked to him on a different day and gave his life to Christ, and all is well. But I missed an opportunity to be a part of God's miracle, and that's what I regret. It's not that God wasn't looking out for Jordan. You see, you can trust God. You can trust that if Jesus went through all the trouble to die, he's not in the business of wasting that effort on as few people as possible. In 2 Peter, it says that God isn't slow about his promises. He's being patient so that everyone has the opportunity to come to repentance. So, when I was a kid in the 80s, I believed that people might be headed towards giving their life to Christ and they get hit by a car. But that doesn't really trust God, does it? Thinking that God wouldn't prevent an accident, you know, they get to heaven and go, man, I was totally right on the edge. And God would say, yeah, I know you were, but you waited one day too long. And I just wasn't willing to stop that accident from killing you. That's not to say don't do the right thing right now. Stephen Furtick, a pastor, says, the right time to do the right thing is right now. And that's absolutely the case. But you can also trust that if someone needs a little longer, that God knows that and he will work on their lives. So I want you to reach out to people online, become friends with them, listen to them. Don't have any regrets about it, and don't push unless you feel the push of the Holy Spirit telling you to. That's what really, really matters, is that lives and eternities are hanging in the balance. Every 2 seconds, someone dies on planet Earth. You can do this. I can do this. Lives and eternities can change. So hop on your Twitter, hop on your Facebook, ask questions, engage with people, be friendly, be nice, just love people. It's a challenge to me, and it's a challenge to you to go out and change eternity.